Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. Pino Sports with you till 2. Grant and Danny at that time. Fred Katz on the Wizards at noon, John Clayton at 1. Pleased to be joined now by Will Brinson from CBS Sports. Will, how are you on this Friday?
What's going on?
How are you, sir? Let's before we get to the games this weekend, man, I thought you were going to get the Colts home last weekend. You went with some intestinal fortitude. You showed some faith in Frank Reich and the guys. And, I mean, Will, they had every right to win that football game and probably should. And Frank Reich probably outcoached himself in that game because Colts gave themselves every opportunity and probably should have won that game last week.
Yeah, I mean, they were the better team. You look at the box scores, you could definitely, you know, talk yourself into why the Colts should have won. And, I mean, I think they played the exact game that they wanted to play. They got the exact game that they wanted from the Bills. They got the whole thing played out, I think, exactly. Like, you know, Frank, if you went back and told Frank Reich, hey, here's how this game is going to play out in terms of pace and possession, you know, the Colts drives, turnovers. I mean, I think they take that game in a heartbeat. Buffalo didn't play bad at all. You know, they didn't make any huge mistakes. Josh Allen dodged that big fumble at the end. And, you know, ultimately they just came up short on those fourth downs and didn't get that field goal. So, I think if you're a Colts fan, you know, you're miffed that you lose, but it's hard to be really upset because you got what you wanted and just didn't convert on those opportunities. And that's sort of what playoff football comes down to sometimes.
Yeah, and I thought from the get-go the AFC playoff was going to be great. I mean, your 7 seed was 11-5, so you had every reason to believe that we were going to get some decent football. Let's talk the coaching situation real quick first. Urban Meyer, and I said all along, the domino was everything was going to start to fall once Urban Meyer decided to or get off the pot in Jacksonville. Well, he chose to go there. So all those guys that were hoping they would get a chance to coach and draft Trevor Lawrence, things start to fall into place. Robert Saleh with the Jets. Let's talk Urban Meyer first. Your thoughts on will he be able to electrify that franchise and, more importantly, that city? Because I know Shad Khan wants a new ballpark eventually and things of that nature. Is a move like this going to get the football product good enough where he can electrify that city and get them excited again?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge proponent of Urban Meyer being great in Jacksonville. I mean, I call myself a hesitant skeptic just because I don't feel like getting old takes exposed on it after being fairly wrong on John Gruden, pretty wrong on Herm Edwards, and really wrong on Mack Brown. You know, look at the last three guys to leave TV to coach football teams. I do think, you know, one thing that's been sort of float through my head today is that Urban Meyer, I mean, maybe more than any coach I can remember in a long time, is just excellent at job selection. And I think that matters more than people give it credit for. You know, like Adam Gase and Rex Ryan, you know, get fired from their respective jobs in the AFC East and then take another job in the AFC East. But like under the premise that I can win wherever I go, even though, you know, if you're smart about it, you would realize that, I mean, like, you know, where you coach and the job you take matters a lot more than people give it credit for. You shouldn't just take a job because it's open. And Urban Meyer's taking the Florida job, which was a sleeping giant, Ohio State, which, you know, fresh off Tressel being fired, was primed to be a great team immediately, and it was. And then Jacksonville with the number one overall pick, tons of cap space, the freedom to do what he wants, geographically an area he knows, not that that matters as much in professional football, but, you know, I think the fan base will like him there, you know, some crossover with Florida. So I think, you know, win or lose, he did a really good job of finding the right spot to try to come into the NFL. I think he'll be an upgrade over what the Jaguars have had the last decade plus. I mean, outside that 2017 run, I mean, since 2008, I think their best season is 7 or 8 wins. So, I mean, I don't think Urban's going to come in and win 10 games next year. But, I mean, he's a smart football coach, schematically. He's a smart, you know, he's a CEO type, which everybody's been talking about this offseason. He knows how to run a football program. And, you know, if he hires the right guys in the front office and the coaching staff, I don't see a reason why he can't be successful there.
Yeah, and obviously from a marketing standpoint, just 80 miles from Gainesville, where he obviously enjoyed great success at the University of Florida. Robert Saleh leaves San Francisco, takes the job with the New York Jets. Personally, I'm glad that he took that job and not the Philadelphia Eagles job. That's not a guy I would want in my division if I was the Washington football team. Thoughts on, again, you look around the league, you look around the playoffs, a lot of those guys coaching in the playoffs are still offensive guys, but there's a few defensive guys, so you know it can work. Your thoughts on Saleh going to the Jets and trying to get them turned around?
Well, I mean, I think you talk about the dominoes, Pete, and I think it's, you know, you think about how, I mean, it really did unfold. Like, you can kind of see how these coaching jobs are lined up, right? I mean, I think the Jets make their move shortly after the Jaguars do. The Jaguars was the, if you know, along with the Chargers, and maybe the Chargers job not as good, or maybe they're just, you know, locked in on Eric Bieniemy as their next guy. Who knows? But certainly, you know, the Jaguars, you know, could make an argument as the top job, and then the Jets very close behind it because of the draft capital, because of the money to spend, et cetera, and some of the blue chip prospects on each roster. So it makes sense that the Jaguars would hire somebody first, and then the Jets would hire somebody shortly thereafter. I'm not saying Robert Saleh wanted the Jaguars job, but I'm sure that, you know, like you say, the Urban Meyer thing is kind of a domino, and I do think the Jets did a good job of going out and getting maybe the best available candidate, a guy who has an infectious leadership style, high energy, going to bring a, you know, I mean, it's, again, the CEO mentality is something that these owners have been echoing. I think Saleh has that sort of overarching view. You know, you go back and you hear stories about him coming to San Francisco. He presents Kyle Shanahan with like a 9-year plan, which is pretty wild for a defensive coordinator interview. And I just think it's a guy who has a vision that he wants to implement. And it's a culture change too for the Jets, who have been perennial losers. I mean, they don't need sad sack Adam Gase in there, like rolling his eyes and complaining about stuff. They need a guy who's, you know, refusing to take excuses and coming in there with some high octane energy, but without like the clown show that, you know, Rex Ryan brings. And so I think Robert Saleh, from that perspective, is a really nice hire.
Let me ask you this. I was thinking about this yesterday, and we continue to see articles popping up all the time, certainly about, you know, the quality of African-American candidates and other minorities just getting interviews, just being given a chance to interview. We have built up this momentum for Eric Bieniemy so much. Have we almost set him up to, I don't want to say to fail, but, you know, Will, if he doesn't go in somewhere and win 10 games maybe within the first 2 years or something like that, I almost feel like the momentum we've all tried to create for him and other candidates like that, we've almost set them up for the impossible, because if they don't go in and do great things, you know, I just wonder what the response is going to be when he finally does take a job. And like you mentioned with Urban Meyer, excellent, excellent job selection. And if I'm Eric Bieniemy, I got to make sure that when I take that job is going to be a job that I can win and win right away, because this can also go bad for you in a hurry with all of the spotlight we've thrown on the fact that Eric Bieniemy hasn't gotten a job yet.
Yeah, it does feel a little unfair to be, I mean, it's a great point. I think it's unfair to Bieniemy that we're sort of treating him as like the one minority candidate. You know what I mean? Like it's almost like he's being held up as sort of a, you know, like a, I mean, a, not like a figurehead, but like a, you know, like he's the guy. It's just like we're taking all of the concerns that we have about hiring practices within the NFL and then just ascribing it to the Eric Bieniemy hire, which is, you know, wildly unfair. I mean, of course there's issues with minority hiring practices in the NFL, and there's issues with minority hiring practices, you know, across the country in a lot of places. And so I think it, But, you know, we don't know how Eric Bieniemy will be as a head coach. We don't know how Arthur Smith will be as a head coach. You know, we do know how Urban Meyer will be as a head coach, but not as an NFL head coach, right? I mean, you know, Robert Saleh is a leap of faith. You know, all of these guys, you're asking them to do something that, you know, they've never done before, to do a job that, for as much as they may have seen, you know, smart guys like Kyle Shanahan and Andy Reid do, they're still doing a new job with tons of new responsibilities and in new places with, you know, with infrastructures that are different. So, yeah, I think it is, it's probably unfair that we're just, it's like, who's going to hire Eric Bieniemy? I mean, this guy has been great. You know, he's got great references. But, you know, like, just because he gets hired somewhere doesn't mean it's going to work out. There's a whole list of reasons outside of, whatever type of person he is, or, you know, whatever, you know, ethnic background he comes from, of why he could succeed or fail. And a lot of times it's based on what kind of organization he ends up with.
Talking with Will Brinson from CBS Sports, turn our attention to the games this week. Baltimore's won 6 in a row. Buffalo's won 7 in a row. Is this the best game of the football weekend?
Technically, I think I'm supposed to tell you that it's Chiefs-Browns because that game is on CBS. I think this is probably the premier game of the weekend. I mean, it's Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. We could get snow Saturday night, 8 o'clock. I was talking, you know, saying, played tennis with some friends last night, and you know, we were talking about it, and they were like, "All right, what's the schedule like this weekend?" And I mentioned it, they're like, "Oh, you know, I mean, like, you can tell like the clear excitement over, you know, having a Saturday night game. You know, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. I think we see a ton of fireworks here. I don't know if it, I kind of tend to think it. I mean, I think it would be some big plays, but I also think this game could easily go under, especially if there's a bunch of wind and it's tracking like it could be, you know, either 13 to 20 miles an hour. And there's a big difference there. Once you get above that 15-mile-an-hour threshold, that's when it starts to impact passing. And if we get a bunch of wind and a bunch of snow, and I think wind benefits Baltimore the most because they don't have to pass, right? You can run the ball, and you can run the ball against Buffalo. They got an undersized defensive front. In their 5 games, the 3 losses and then 2 close games, the win over the Colts in the last weekend and then the win over the Rams in that crazy game that had, you know, they were up big and then gave up a, you know, coughed up a lead and then had a comeback. In those 5 games, they gave up 160 rush yards or more. So I think if Baltimore can run the ball effectively early on, it's the Ravens game to lose. But, you know, if for some reason Buffalo can take some shots down the field early, get Stephon Diggs against maybe Marcus Peters and have Peters gamble, you get some shots over the top, couple of scores, and then all of a sudden force Lamar Jackson to throw a ton, then it flips the field on his head. So I really think it's sort of simplistic to say, but it's whoever gets out to the hot start can really put the screws on the other team.
You got the Rams home last weekend as an underdog selection. Out of all the underdogs this weekend, who in your mind has the best chance to break through? Is it Baltimore, who's getting 3? Or is it those Tampa Bay Buccaneers who are getting 3 but got blown out both times by the Saints earlier this year?
Yeah, I mean, I got Baltimore winning outright. So, I mean, I'll take Baltimore. I think the Saints can – I don't know if the Saints will roll here. I mean, it's just hard to imagine Tom Brady getting steamrolled in a playoff game where, you know, he's got Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin, and Mike Evans. I mean, those are some dudes who can put up some points pretty fast. So, I don't think that'll happen. I just have a really difficult time trusting Bruce Arians – to make the, you know, to not be stubborn. I mean, he's a great coach, obviously, but, you know, he loves to stick to his system. And I just wonder, you know, if he's willing to get out of his system and let Brady kind of go old school Brady and dink and dunk all over the place with these guys and then take some shots down the field to Evans. Once you set that up, then I think it's a lot easier for the Buccaneers to have a chance to win. But they're 1-4 and a straight up an 0-5 against the spread against top 10 defenses by DVOA, including last week against Washington. I know they looked better, but, you know, you're still very lethargic in stretches of that game. You can't do that against the Saints, who have a much better offense in Washington, especially with, you know, as well as Taylor Heineke played. So I got the Saints winning that one. And then, you know, obviously you have to be an insane person to pick the Browns to win or Odell Beckham, I guess. But, I mean, yeah, at least an interesting game, I think.
Well, great stuff as always. Appreciate the visit. We look forward to having you back next week and take a look at Championship Weekend. Thanks for the time this morning.
All right, sounds good. See
you. You got it. Will Brinson from CBS Sports joining us. We'll expand on this a little bit on these games this weekend in this next segment. What's your thoughts on them as well? We'll talk with John Clayton about the NFL at 1 o'clock. Also later this hour, I read a column you know, in USA Today that I got to bring to your attention, just of how foolish sometimes people are with what they write. I'm not going to crush the writer. I'm just going to crush what they wrote about because I thought it was incredibly silly as it pertained to Alabama and the dynasty that they've developed now, winning six of the last 12 national championships. But if you like some trends, I'm going to give you some trends, like my man Michelin out there on Twitter. If you like some trends, I'm going to give you some interesting ones involving a couple of these games coming up this weekend, especially on the Saturday games, where some money, especially in that Baltimore-Buffalo game, trending in a weird direction. 1-800-636-1067. Back on the phones, you can talk about the Washington football team name as we were last hour as well. We can get back to all of that coming up next right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Urban Meyer's the guy in Jacksonville. Robert Saleh with the Jets. Arthur Smith has been offered the job in Atlanta. Will he take it is the question. You heard my question to Will Brinson, and you heard Will's answer. I mean, in some ways, have we almost set up Eric Bieniemy to fail? We have made him this, you know, football messiah for African-American candidates. And if you're Eric Bieniemy, you really need to be particular about the job you take, because if you don't hit the ground running, you know, there's potential there for people to turn on you quickly, as we well know in the National Football League. So, is it the Chargers' job because you seemingly have a ready-made quarterback to hit the ground running there? It's possible. The guy that was coaching there, Anthony Lynn, according to Tom Pelissero and Ian Rappaport, he has talked to Pete Carroll about the open offensive coordinator job in Seattle. Lynn hasn't made a decision on what he wants to do in 2021. Obviously, you know, when you get fired, you have time on your contract. You can sit there for free if you want. But, you know, right now he's apparently among Seattle's top choices to take over there as the offensive coordinator for Brian Schottenheimer. Saw a report yesterday that Russell Wilson said, hey, it wasn't me that got Brian Schottenheimer fired. And it's always good to see the quarterback come out and support the guy after he's fired. You know, it wasn't like he stood up on the table, apparently, to keep him there. Pete Carroll, obviously, and John Schneider had to make a decision, you know, one way or the other, in that standpoint. So the dominoes are going to start to fall now, though, with Urban Meyer getting Jacksonville and taking, you know, that number one selection, taking that off the table. You're going to have the other jobs now start to fill up. We're going to see offers being made. And those who talk to Eric Bieniemy already will have a chance for a second interview, either A, if the Chiefs get upset by the Browns, or they'll have to wait for Bieniemy. They can interview him if they've already done it once. They can conduct a second interview in that bye week between the AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl. But you have to have already talked to a coaching candidate to conduct a second interview during that particular bye week. And I think, the NFL's timetable don't help coaches and assistants who are in the playoffs very much. You know, teams want to get moving on some of this, and perhaps they need to have a little more patience on the surface, you think, but everybody wants the same candidate. You know, those guys want to make a decision so they can get, you know, their families situated and get going on that new job. So it's kind of a catch-22. If you keep on coaching the playoffs, you know, your ability to really decide whether you want to take one of those jobs and focus on it, you know, really, there's a lot of pressure there. There's a lot of pressure there. A lot of pressure there for those organizations as well. Look, we've had enough money in these games this weekend, and I found this one particular trend interesting here. The 51% of the money in the Buffalo-Baltimore game is on Buffalo, like with the spread. In other words, Buffalo -3 in this game. And as Will and I were talking about, Buffalo has won 7 in a row. Baltimore has won 6 in a row. Vegas loved Baltimore on the road last week. Loved Baltimore as a road favorite, and they covered in that game, obviously, last week on the road. It was just terrific. Just terrific. Now, the total in that game has only come down a half point. Started at 15, it's come down to 49.5. But what has also, and I'm it's got to be, you know, a couple of different ways here, but in terms of the money line, you know, Buffalo has gone back and forth anywhere from 140 to 125, and they're back to 140 now, but 85% of the money in this game is on Buffalo. And as much as Vegas loved Baltimore last week, I find that trend with Buffalo being such a you know, heavy choice in terms of the money right now, I find that to be, you know, kind of extraordinary here. Hasn't been, you know, totals pretty much, you look at everywhere, the total is pretty much stuck around. Of course, you can go to BetQL, you can track all of their stuff. BetQL's got tremendous formulas in every sport that have been very successful. You can go to the BetQL app today and visit BetQL.com. Plus, you know, our friends at FanDuel as well. That, you know, that total right now has come down to 49 there with FanDuel. It's Buffalo 2.5 right now in terms of the line. But still, just really surprised at the confidence in Buffalo with the way Baltimore has been playing, and with that same self-confidence that Vegas has had in Baltimore. Really surprised that a lot of the total there on that contest would be with Buffalo at this point. Meanwhile, the Rams in Green Bay, that's a 4:35 game tomorrow. No surprise here. 78% of that money and 76% of the money against the spread on Green Bay, even though the number has come down a half a point. Opened at 7, Green Bay sitting there at 6.5. And that's respect to that Rams defense. And even though Aaron Donald got banged up a little bit last week, you know, he's going to play here. He's going to play coming up in this game. So that's a lot of that respect to that Rams defense. Total is interesting as well at 45.5. It's come down a full point, opened at 46.5. And again, likely cold weather game. And the question's going to be Rams offense. That's why that total's come down. I mean, Rams offense with Jared Goff playing the whole game. Wolford's going to be out, you know, after getting his bell rung last week. And if Goff's thumb gives him a problem, it's Blake Bortles. So that's probably why. It's not that Aaron Rodgers and company, you know, going up against a great defense isn't part of it, but I don't know how much the Rams are going to score either with Jared Goff. They're going to have to hope Cam Akers is fantastic in this football game, plain and simple. If Cam Akers has a good game, they can keep it away from Aaron Rodgers and that Packers offense and the great Devontae Adams. You know, then maybe the Rams have a chance. That defense could keep them in the game. But Cam Akers is going to have to be huge. Going to have to be huge in this game for the Rams if they're going to generate enough offense to win it. We'll talk Wizards with Fred Katz. More COVID issues there. Quentin Mayo reporting that it looks like those back-to-backs with Cleveland Sunday and Monday likely to go by the wayside as well. We'll talk about that with Fred at noon. John Clayton on the NFL at 1. Byron Kerr's got an update right here on The Fan. They love shortstops. Hey, Armando Cruz, can you play third base? I know Trey Turner played some third base at NC State. You know, maybe somewhere down the road, maybe that's their solution. Don't know how fast we'll, you know, you got to get Cruz, obviously, up here into the minor league pipeline at some point. And that guy's hands look amazing, though. But we've seen a lot of guys. We've seen a lot of guys that look slick as fielders. Question is, can you hit? Can you hit when you get up here and play at the professional level? And ultimately, as excited as I know some of you Nats fans are out there about Armando Cruz, we need to see the young fella hit. Okay, we need to see the young fella hit some. Though, you know, the days of having the Mark Belangers of the world, you know, the Ozzie Smiths, the guy that are slick fielders that hit about 220. I don't know how much you can get away with that these days, but that young fellow looks like he's got some skills, certainly in the field. Quick hands, great transfer. So we'll see if Armando Cruz, again, Nationals International Scouting has not let them down. They've done a pretty solid job here of late. Hard to argue against that track record. And we'll see once Armando Cruz gets up here, as Britt Ciroli and many of the other beat writers talking about, as Byron Kerr said in the update, upwards of 11 that they have signed from an international standpoint right now. So that DJ LeMahieu off the table, you know, who's next? You know, who's the next guy? You know, LeMahieu sets a little bit of a market there. You know, he's off the table now. So, you know, Michael Brantley's still out there. George Springer's still out there. Washington likely not to be in on either one of those guys after signing Kyle Schwarber and trading for Josh Bell. It'll be interesting to see as they probably turn their attention to pitching right now, maybe a catcher as well. You know, I guess technically they wouldn't be out of the Realmuto market. Be interesting to see what the Realmuto market is right now, quite frankly, from a term standpoint. I know the annual value is going to be big. I know the annual value is going to be big, you know, for JT Realmuto. The question for me with a catcher, as always, at this point is term. You know, how long is somebody willing to go on him? And that will be ultimately, you know, I think what decides it for Realmuto. Plus, you got to, if you're JT Realmuto at this point, you're not going to a non-contender. You know, you're doing everything you can at this point in your career. You want to play with a contender. Most of the offers that are going to be out there, I think, are going to be pretty fair, you know, for his ability as a catcher. And, you know, when you look around the game right now and you look at what's available out there, you know, it's not like he's got a ton of guys competing at the same spot, you know, for those dollars out there. I mean, he's the guy. You know, this is a you know, albeit it's kind of a good time positionally to be a free agent, but it's a bad time because of the pandemic and the market. Still didn't, you know, keep the Yankees from going 5-90 on LeMahieu. You know, the Corey Kluber workout the other day went, you know, from all reports, decently. Upwards of 25 teams were there. You know, what kind of a salary is the former two-time Cy Young Award winner going to command if you're, you know, a Washington team looking, you know, for a fourth starter? You know, does somewhere in the $6 to $8 million range sound fair? You know, I think it's there's some risk when it comes to a player like this. If it hits, it turns out to be fantastic. You know, but in this case, if it goes bad, then it's obviously money wasted and down the tubes. And you know, you're still looking at a situation where you've got to find something, and maybe one of your younger kids have to eventually come up and be a part of that rotation at some point. You know, if Ross and Fetty can steady, you know, the back end of that rotation, that's another, you know, again, from a salary standpoint, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Keeps you from having to go out and, you know, spend some money or make a trade. And that's the thing that, you know, Mike Rizzo is always shrewd about. You know, he's always considering, and he'll always make a deal when you least expect it. And other general managers in other sports wish they could do business the way Mike Rizzo does. Never seen a guy. You know, there are times where you have some general managers where you feel like their house is tapped. Every move they make is leaked somewhere, you know, whether by an agent or by people in their front office or something like that. It's almost like they got reporters have a wiretap on some general manager's places. And then there's Mike's. Mike's probably looking under tables and looking outside for people who've put microphones out there. You know, did somebody leave a cell phone with a line open just so they can hear some of that communication? I mean, it is unbelievable how Mike is able to keep things close to the vest. But, you know, again, tip of the cap to their international scouting people. They do a terrific, terrific job. And it looks like, you know, on the surface at least, another nice little building block to follow here with Armando Cruz to see if he can eventually turn into a significant major league player. If you missed it on Byron's update, Archie Bradley, the relief pitcher with the Phillies, gets 1 year, $6 million. Alex Wood signs with the Giants, 1 year, $3 million there. Jose Martinez, a guy that, you know, probably better as a DH, but, you know, with the Mets on a split contract for the right fielder, first baseman, and outfielder Nick Williams gets a minor league deal with the Chicago White Sox. So those are the moves made in baseball, moves made involving the Nationals with 11 signed from an international standpoint. And, again, the beauty of that, is watching those guys come up through the system. And right now, you don't know what that system is going to be like this season. I mean, we have no idea what the minor league structure is going to look like at all for the upcoming season. And you feel bad for a lot of these cities. I mean, that's for some of those businesses in those areas, you know, having those guys and those teams in town, I mean, that is in many ways a lot of their money during the course of the season. Now, in bigger markets like this, you know, I don't necessarily know how much, you know, the buoys, you know, obviously in years past, teams like, you know, Frederick, obviously the P-Nats have moved down to Fredericksburg now, going to be playing there at some point. You don't know if it's going to be this year. You know, that's the lower version. Just like in hockey, you know, right now you got a lot of teams in the ECHL that have said, nope, we're not playing, sorry, not this year. And you just wonder, because of the need for testing protocols, you wonder how deep with this realignment in minor league baseball, you wonder how deep they're going to be able to go this season. So the question is going to be, where does Armando Cruz may just stay down there in Florida, could end up being in the Gulf Coast League. I'm sure they'll be able to do something down there. You know, for whatever reason, we appear to be able to do things in Florida, you know, without a whole lot of recourse right now for some reason. So at least from a baseball perspective, spring training in particular, you know, Florida's going to be a great place to be. And maybe that's, you know, maybe Armando Cruz stays down there, you know, with the Gulf Coast Nats and play some in Florida. That's always been the magic of the minor leagues. You could follow, especially around here. You know, my man Russ Adams used to run around to all these different, you know, Nats farm teams, Harrisburg. He'd go up to Auburn and watch the short season team that they used to have up there, you know, watching the Potomac Nationals. Guys would go down there on rehab assignments, and people would run down there to watch those games because, you know, if you couldn't afford to come to a big league ball game, whenever somebody would go down on a rehab assignment, you know, you go watch Steven Strasburg throw a couple of innings. You know, go watch Ryan Zimmerman get a few at-bats or something down there at Potomac. It was a great way to watch some of, A, the stars of today when they're down on rehab, but more importantly, to follow the stars of tomorrow. It almost felt like you had a connection with them. You know, you go back, and when these guys get to the major leagues, a lot of people on Twitter start throwing up those pictures that they got with a Nat who was down at Potomac or at Harrisburg or at Hagerstown and things of that nature. And that's the magic of the minor leagues. And unfortunately, we just don't know what that's going to present here in 2021. So if you're a younger player, you know, especially these pitchers that the Nats have that, you know, you would think are close, you know, the Cade Cavallis, the Jackson Rutledges of the world that are somewhat close. Beauty of being able to watch those guys develop. We've kind of lost that a little bit because of the inactivity of the minor leagues and really not knowing what it's going to be coming up this year. When we come back, going to talk about a story I saw in USA Today, kind of astonishing to me as it pertained to someone's perception of the Alabama dynasty and what you could do about it. I don't know what you can do about it, but we'll talk about that next. Fred Katz on the Wizards at noon. John Clayton on the NFL at 1. Pete on Sports with you till 2. Grant and Danny at that time. Ryan Kerrigan joins their show today right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back. Fred Katz on the Wizards at noon. John Clayton on the NFL at 1. You and me till 2. Ryan Kerrigan with Grant and Danny coming up this afternoon right here on The Fan. Whenever there is a dynasty in sports, you know, we have the haves, the people that like the dynasty, and then we have the have-nots, those who are jealous of the dynasty, okay? I mean, think about this. You know, the Washington football team in the 80s was played, even though they were successful, they played in relative anonymity compared to, you know, Bill Walsh's San Francisco 49ers. People talk about those teams from the 80s, always 49ers. It's not necessarily, you know, about, you know, Washington's success during that time, even though it was every bit as good for the most part. But whenever there's a dynasty, everybody wants to to break it up? Well, Jack Kent Cook, you know, the DeBartolo family with San Francisco, and obviously the Cowboys at that time, you know, they were dominating at a way in the 80s that everybody kind of got jealous of. So the other owner said, oh, we've got to do something about this. We've got to do something about these three teams. They keep kicking our rear end, so we can't compete with them. How do we do that? Well, that's when they put in the salary cap. They put in the salary cap. You know, we saw the emergence of Plan B free agency, which Charlie Casserly was fantastic at, you know, during his time as the Washington general manager. So we had to find ways on the professional level to kind of level the playing field. It wasn't just the fact that in the NFL, if you stink, you pick first, okay? You know, the NBA, you know, got afraid of people tanking and all this other stuff, so they have this silly draft lottery and everything now. In the NFL, if you suck, you get a chance to do something about it, okay? If you have that bad year, you get the first pick, okay? In college football, does Alabama, you know, have a monopoly on things right now? Clemson, Ohio State, you know, those three teams in particular, Oklahoma, kind of the that next group in terms of being consistent? Sure, sure. And has the college football playoff, you know, put us in a position, not the program's fault, but the people that run college football? Has that put us in a position where a lot of people have kind of gotten to the point where they're like, yeah, we've seen this, okay? Ratings sucked on Monday night, okay? You had the two biggest brands in college football, arguably, you know, Big Ten, you know, and SEC, and the ratings stunk, okay, compared to where they've been. Still a lot of people watching. You know, 18-7 rating is still pretty good. But compared to where it's been, no. And, you know, people want to blame it on the fact that, or more than just COVID, people are tired of seeing the same teams. Well, you know, sorry, your team's not good enough. You don't coach good enough. You don't recruit good enough. Your players don't play good enough. So I'm reading this column in USA Today from, and I apologize if I crush his last name, but Brent Schrotenbauer, and he writes about, you know, how to break up or why we should break up this Saban-Bama monopoly in terms of the headline, okay? And one of his things is redistributing recruiting talent. You know, obviously, as he points out, unlike in the NFL, college football does not have a player draft in which the worst teams get to pick the best players, you know? And he says, and he's right, by contrast, Alabama, Clemson, each, you know, with four of the top 22 players in the 2020 recruiting class. You know, Bryce Young's going to take over, another great quarterback for Alabama there. So no end in sight maybe to their opportunity to stay on top. DJ Uiagalelei, the quarterback coming up for Clemson, they're going to be good again. So, you know, he talks about, you know, reducing scholarships from 85 to 75 to prevent elite teams from hoarding the best players, spreading the talent around more evenly. Brent, here's the problem with doing that, okay? Even if you knock it down from 85 to 75, Bryce Young's still going to Alabama. Tua Tagovailoa, still going to Alabama. Jalen Hurts, still going to Alabama. Okay, so maybe Slade Bolden, the wide receiver, who was like, you know, fifth in their rotation this year, you know, maybe he decides to go somewhere else, because they might run out of scholarships. Maybe that backup offensive lineman, you know, maybe goes somewhere else. That's not going to keep Alex Leatherwood from going to Alabama. That's not going to keep Landon Dickerson from going to Alabama. That's not going to keep Jonathan Allen from going to Alabama. They're still going to get the star players. They're still going to get the best guys. Big deal if you whack the scholarship count by 10. Okay? Big deal. Expand the college football playoff. No, no, because if Alabama beats the best team by 28, what are they going to do, you know, to the other teams? Because he talked about those teams getting a chance to raise their profile. The teams right behind them on the outside are all in the SEC anyway. Georgia, Texas A&M. Yes, this year would have been, it would have been great to see that NCAA tournament-like, you know, underdog Coastal Carolina or Cincinnati get a chance. Cincinnati had a really good club. You know, I see them all the time, the American Athletic Conference. But Alabama this year was still going to beat those teams by the same thing. They played Texas A&M, who was fifth, and blew them out. So even if we expand this, you're not going to upset Alabama. You may get the four seed knocked off by the five. You know, Oklahoma, in my mind, Oklahoma would have had a really good chance to beat Notre Dame in a 4-5 matchup this year, if that would have been the case. Texas A&M would have had a chance to compete with Notre Dame in a 4-5 matchup. I wouldn't say they would guarantee they would beat them. You know, Notre Dame did a lot of good things this year in football until they ran into the best team. So you can cut scholarships, but unless you just say, hey, Alabama, you got to take a year off, you're not going to stop this amongst the top teams. You know, Ohio State's still going to get great players like Chase Young in their program, like Justin Fields, even if you go from 85 to 75. Clemson's still going to get Trevor Lawrence. Okay? So we can cut these. It comes down to hiring coaches who get it, who know how to develop players, and eventually get them on their way to the National Football League. That's why that dynasty lives and lives well with six titles in 12 years. Coming up, Fred Katz talks Wizards, John Clayton at 1, all straight ahead in the second half of the show right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.